Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. How are you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
We're glad I'm fine.
Good. I'm glad you called. We're going to be talking today about CIT training for police officers. This is Nina Simone. Lots of people do not know it. She suffered from mental illness. She's thinking, I wish I knew how it felt. Different.
I'm not able to hear you over the music.
I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart.
For coming to join us at Human Rights Demand. You know that that is a phrase from Frederick Douglass's quote. He said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. We are inviting the public here today at Human Rights Demand to talk about the Senate Judiciary Committee's hearing that will be held on Tuesday regarding CIT training for police officers. That is crisis intervention training. Many times when the police in America seriously injure or kill our mentally ill relatives and friends and neighbors and fellow countrymen, it is said that those deaths and serious injuries are attributed to the lack of training that police officers have regarding crisis intervention and a mentally ill subject. I believe that that's partly true. On the other hand, police officers disregard the training that they have received regarding any American that is being taken into custody in a good number of these incidents. For instance, it doesn't take special training to know that it is unlawful to beat an unarmed, surrendered subject to death. That happened by Fullerton, California, police officers in the arrest of Kelly Thomas. He was unarmed and surrendered, and he was beaten to death. It really does not take CIT training to know that these officers' behavior was unlawful. Neither should it take special classes for the six police officers who murdered a man in Michigan, that firing squad, in the open public, where their bullets risked not only killing the subject they were shooting at, Milton Hall, but they risked community safety as well. They certainly knew that it was unlawful to do capital punishment, that firing squad, on a man with a little pocket knife who had done no crime. Hall had reportedly argued with the store clerk, which was worthy of disturbing the peace, a misdemeanor charge at most. It shouldn't take crisis intervention training to know that that was wrong. So I think that whereas crisis intervention training may help some police officers who have no experience dealing with arrests of mentally ill people, it certainly won't stem police violence against the mentally ill and against other Americans if they choose to disregard their training. Most of these police killings of the mentally ill and police brutality cases against the mentally ill and other Americans require police officers to disregard the training that they've already received. So I'm going to invite the public to speak now, and all you really have to do to speak on this issue is dial 347-857-3293. Again, that's 347-857-3293. And I really appreciate our callers, and I appreciate your opinions on this matter. I'm going to send this tape to Senator Durden, who is over this committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, that is meeting on this issue on Tuesday. Whether or not it will be entered into the congressional record, I do not know, because the rules say that they're not using material that's been previously published. But we want them to know anyway what we think about CIT training. And my first caller is 1429. Introduce yourself and go ahead and voice your opinion.
Okay. My name is Lisa Bates. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, Lisa. I do hear you. How are you?
I'm really good. And I couldn't agree with you more. I've been watching these episodes on the news and becoming more and more alarmed. And I think one of the things that's really contributing to the situation is this militarization of the police across the country. I know my little town of Provo, Utah, that's probably got the lowest crime rate anywhere I've ever lived, has got two tanks now. And they have all kinds of gear, and they're just ready for a riot. And it's crazy. And I can see how it's happening across the country, where grants are being given to police stations to get this equipment and to get this military-style training and point of view. And I think that it is really creating an us-and-them mentality in the police. And then when someone comes along who is mentally ill and just doesn't play the game on cue the way that they expect someone to immediately just fold. They consider it resistance, and they go into attack mode. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, let me ask you, do you think that crisis intervention training for police officers will put a dent, a serious dent, in the number of deaths by police and brutality by police that the mentally ill suffer? Do you think that crisis intervention training is the answer, or do you think it's the only answer that we need?
I think that crisis intervention training would never hurt. I think anytime, I'm mentally ill myself. I was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type, when I was 35. And I was completely unable to function for a number of years. And I'm now in recovery to the point where I'm going to grad school and I'm volunteering 20 hours a week. So I have a pretty, you know, unique view on it. Not unique, because there are a lot of people who are in recovery like me. But those people could have been me very easily if they had caught me at a different time in my life, when I wasn't able to think what the meaning of my sentence was by the time I got to the end of it. And I couldn't be logical, and I was confused all the time. And a lot of that was due to the medication that they were trying to stabilize me on. But anyway, I digress. I think that crisis intervention training would never hurt, but I do not think that it is the whole answer. I think that you're absolutely right, that the police are disregarding their basic mission, which is to protect and serve.
Well, I'm so glad that you called in, Lisa Bates, especially because you speak to us from the standpoint of one of the victims of mental illness, and you know there was a time when, as you said, if you had been caught up in a situation with police officers, that you would not have responded, quote, unquote, appropriately. You would not
right.
have, you know, the thing is that I think sometimes the only people who might make it out of a confrontation with police alive are the ones who know how to use CIT training on the officers. I've heard people say,
relate to that.
Talk very calmly to the police. Talk very calmly. Move very slow. No quick movements. Be very careful when you reach for your wallet, for your license. Say to the police, I'm reaching for my license
right.
now. So in other words, the issue seems to be more who knows how to use CIT on the police officers than the police officers using crisis intervention training on the subjects. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely do. My husband is really fond of watching that reality show Cops, which I
yes.
take some exception with. But I have noticed over the years an increasingly violent manner in which the police overpower their subjects. And I have noticed that many times a person will get their arm yanked around behind them in a way that is not consistent with the way the human body goes, and they flinch, and they immediately have about five police officers sitting on them screaming, don't resist. Even while they're,
right.
they're shouting, I'm not resisting, I'm not resisting. Well,
right.
what if a person has a physical disability, let alone a mental one?
Yes. Yes. The culture in America is increasingly dangerous, not only for people who are suffering from mental illness, but also, of course, our African Americans who are arrested. And increasingly,
yes.
this is spilling over, and it's becoming the norm. Brutality during arrest is becoming the norm, even for white people. And so It is out of hand, and I say to the citizens and I say to the U.S. Senate that it is the people who oftentimes must use their crisis intervention training on the police officers, who seem to be very stressed. They seem to be very antagonized. They seem to be very aggressive. And very often the things that are happening to the mentally ill during arrest, the deaths by police and the brutality, do not result necessarily from the lack of crisis intervention training per se, but the lack of willingness on the part of police officers to obey standard arrest procedures the way they should. So what's going to happen after lots of tax money is spent on crisis intervention training and the police officers decide to disregard that training? They do disregard their training when they get ready. And a lot of these deaths and injuries are caused by disregarding police training regarding arrests. So when we spend all of this money on crisis intervention training, is that going to really matter unless we put in place investigations of police officers who are involved in violent arrests? They need to be immediately investigated, including drug testing for drugs and steroids. And when
yes.
people die, yes, and when people die in the back of police cars after they've been searched twice and after
and
they
handcuffed.
Get handcuffed, bang, yes, you're right.
I remember that case.
Yes, Chavis Carter and others. There have been numerous cases like that lately, although I think that Chavis Carter in Arkansas, his case got the most attention, but there have been numerous cases like that. And now when people are killed in police custody, they cite the Chavis Carter case as their excuse almost, saying, oh, yes, he was handcuffed and he was searched, but he still managed to kill himself. That also happened in Arkansas. So
right.
the case that they got away with is the one that police officers who do that same thing in other places or who find themselves in that same situation with dead arrestees who had been searched and handcuffed, they cite the Chavis Carter case as though to say, it happens. And we don't know that that's what happened in Chavis Carter's case because there was no gunpowder residue test done on his hands or the police officers. So unless the system uses the opportunity that it has to investigate these police brutality and deaths by police more thoroughly than they do, then I submit to you that I think crisis intervention training will not make the difference that it would. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I have noticed in the news, whenever there is a death, police officer is the one who is accountable. They get put on leave with pay for a period of time, and then they get exonerated. And it systematically happens that way. In the last 10 years that I've lived here and paid attention to the news, there has not been one death by police hands that I'm aware of that was not exonerated.
Well, that seems to be the case. And let me bring into the conversation 8522. Would you introduce yourself and make your statement, please?
Good afternoon, Shirley. Hello. This is Elizabeth Gaskins. I'm not well at
Hello,
this time.
Hello, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm not well at this time. I've had a lot of police abuse this past month. They shut my utilities off, and I've had police officers come in my home as a homeowner and threaten me with an arrest, and on and on and on. And I agree with you today that intervention with police officers, with the, I don't believe that they will focus on training and do right for the people. They have a pattern of their own training, and they have continued this for hundreds of years. And unless we, the people, hold them accountable for their actions, we're going to be victims of police brutality throughout the United States.
So
they're not held accountable for their actions. I'm a survivor of police brutality, as you know, and I've been beat by police in different states and falsely arrested. And they don't care about the training.
So your statement is that CIT training alone will not resolve the problem because there's no accountability. Training without accountability for those who disregard training, and they do these things in disregard of the training they've already received. You understand that? Because there are already laws against the way you've been brutalized. There's already laws against that. And they know this. So they're not obeying the training. And so we're talking because the U.S. Senate is holding a special judiciary committee hearing on CIT training, crisis intervention training, regarding the arrest of mentally ill people, because so many, in fact, over 50% of our victims of police violence are mentally ill people. So now they're thinking about nationwide CIT training, I hope. On the other hand, I'm putting forth the idea that police who are not held accountable for disregarding their training will not necessarily change. And we have 8879 on the line. Hello, 8879. Will you introduce yourself and make a statement, please? I'm sorry, 8979.
Oh, hello, Ms. Neal. I was actually just listening. This is Nancy Lockhart, but I can go on and make a statement.
Please.
I actually am rather disturbed about all of the mentally ill individuals who are going into prison and jail, more specifically Mr. Robert Taylor in the state of New Jersey, who was an alcoholic, was thrown into the hole, as we say, with no clothes, was not able to use any facilities in terms of the restroom or take a shower, and, you know, recently and died as a result of being ignored. The prison states that it wanted to save, you know, funds. I believe that substance abuse, you know, falls under the category of mental illness.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Substance abuse does fall under the category of mental illness. And many people who have mental illness try to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol, street drugs and alcohol, and part of that reason is because mental health services are deprived from a great many mentally ill people in the United States of America, and so are drug treatment programs and alcohol treatment programs. The thing is that Senator Tim Murphy put forward a bill that includes the resumption of Medicaid for certain inpatient treatment facilities. It included AOT training, I'm sorry, AOT program, that's assisted outpatient treatment programs, that would give the mentally ill and perhaps substance abuse persons, it would give them housing and food and mandated psychiatric treatment. And then it also provides for relaxed HIPAA laws so that the families of persons who are in prisons, jails, hospitals would have the right to know about their mental health treatment or their drug treatment. They would have a right to know what's going on with their relatives. And I think that it also, of course, includes CIT training. So to my idea, it's somewhat disturbing to take one part of this bill that is comprehensive regarding the overhaul of America's known health care system and only concentrate on training police officers to bring in more living mental patients. We have 1.25 million people with mental illness who are already behind bars. Tell us a little bit more about this man who died. What did he die of?
Well, I'm not even certain if there was an autopsy done, a private autopsy done on him, but he died, we believe, of, you know, withdrawal from alcohol. This was at the Burlington County Jail in Mount Holly, New Jersey. And Mr. Taylor was believed to be a homeless alcoholic. He was just thrown into a cell where he was strapped in what they refer to as a turtle suit, you know, the strap suits. And he passed away it's awful, lying in a pool of his urine and feces. However, this particular jail, it is a county jail, there have been other individuals who have passed away because of a neglect of medical assistance, but Mr. Robert Taylor, you know, passed away because they refused to take him to the hospital or even to, you know, the medical facility at the local jail. And there's a great young man who was in jail for some other reasons that has brought this case, you know, to the attention, to the public, Mr. Terzansky, who was in there for, I believe, some misdemeanors or whatever. But needless to say, Mr. Robert Taylor was, you know, in there. I don't remember the period of time. I believe it was a little over a month. And there are witnesses, you know, who state that he wasn't able to eat. The food was just shoved in there to him. He wasn't really checked on. You know, no one really observed him or anything. Other than to maybe open the cell door, spray some Lysol, and close the cell door, you know, back. And he was just, you know, using the bathroom all over himself. None of the guards, no one went in there to see about him. I just can't stress that enough. And basically, the young man, Mr. Terzansky, wrote letters out. He sent a letter out by a person who was leaving, was being released from jail, and that individual contacted some media, and that's sort of how the ball got rolling. Mr. Terzansky, you know, basically was the whistleblower, and is definitely suffering, you know, from that now. Basically, that's it in a nutshell. I can send you a trailer to a documentary that Mr. Terzansky and his family have put together. I believe it's going to be a feature film or a documentary toward the end of the summer. But, you know,
well,
they're
wonderful.
Calling for...
Let me interrupt you a second, please. I want to thank the audience who joined us by computer. You might be cut off if you joined by computer. You have only 28 seconds to call in, and that's 347-857-3293. We're going to repeat this same program tomorrow at 3 p.m., and I ask any of you that plan to call to please call back tomorrow at 3 p.m., to get your testimony in, and I agree with Nancy completely. Thank you for joining us. We're going to continue now for another 15 minutes. Your conversation will be on tape. I will send the tape to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I want to emphasize to you that not only do police officers need CIT training, but unless our jails and prisons have more accountability for the lives that are lost behind bars, these deaths are going to continue. As a matter of fact, if the light is going to be shed on police who kill people during arrest on our streets, I want you to know that these same police officers will simply take the person in custody and then kill them behind bars. These same police officers might very well do that. And I'm going to give each of you an opportunity to begin. I believe we have a new caller. No, we lost that call. Let's see if we have a new caller on 7892. Would you introduce yourself and have a word?
Yes, hi. My name is Gloria, and I'm an American Disabilities Advocate, and I started out in Rhode Island. People with mental disabilities, it could be OCD, ADHD, anxiety disorders, are entitled to a disability advocate at all times in court with them by their own choosing. I started off doing this because I had to go through court myself, and I had no one there. I suffer from post-traumatic stress anxiety disorders from horrific violent offense that was caused by my ex-husband, and also he did the same thing to my children. The courts are not set up for disabled people with disabilities, invisible disabilities, that's what they're called, because our arms are not hacked off, our legs are not hacked off, you know, we look normal and everybody assumes we are. But our thinking, you know, is off a bit, and some more severe than others. But any person that has a mental illness is entitled under the American Disabilities Act of 2008, and if anybody Googles that, it's a federal person with disabilities has rights to the same treatment as another human being that can think straight. It's not a state law, it's not a court law, it's a federal law, and that's where a lot of people go wrong. I'm advocating right now for a woman that was had custody taken away from her, and she was diagnosed by the court evaluator as bipolar, which they all do. The court evaluators, the psychiatrists or psychologists, are getting paid to evaluate you. They have an interest in populating the prisons, populating the juvenile justice private homes and group homes. I worked for a mental facility for about 3 years, and I saw them, you know, with 3-4-year-old kids coming in and putting them on psych drugs, and for a 5-minute visit, just go and off with the prescription. Most of these kids will never, ever be free of a natural growing up, because they will, you know, be chemically induced, and once they turn 18 and they don't need to go to the psychiatrist, the Band-Aid comes off and they're ballistic. They don't have any natural coping skills because they've been chemically induced for 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. It's a very sad situation. I've seen it. I breathe it. I've been in courts. I've chased state cops for the person with disabilities in the back. I've gone into prisons. I've gone into state police barracks, and they look at me like, huh, really? That does exist? Yeah, it's a federal law, you know?
Well, I'm glad to know that. That there's a federal law that anyone with mental disabilities has the right to have an advocate appear them whenever they have to appear before a court of law. Is that right?
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad to know that. And I hope you will send me a copy of that before our show
it's
tomorrow.
A federal law.
Because we're going to meet again tomorrow on the radio at 3 p.m. And we're going to just take testimony from individuals regarding how they feel about CIT training. And what I seem to get from our participants here today is that most of you, you're all in favor of CIT training, but you're saying that's not the whole answer. Is that right?
Oh, God, no. No, the
that's
police
right.
are not trained. If anybody knows anybody with attention deficit disorder, they get nervous, you know, they're always alert. Now, if they get stopped on the side of the road, of course they're going to look weird and antsy and jittery, you know, and the police are not aware of, you know, the symptoms of these invisible disabilities because the person looks fine, you know. And, you know, I've seen kids that have been shot in the back, okay, and paralyzed. I've seen people die in the back of police cars because their anxiety was so heightened and their blood goes up in there, you know, because the person looked normal. But little do they know, their heart is racing on the inside. They don't know how to do anything, these police. And there's federal money that comes into each police station, state or county or town, to train these guys. But they use it for different things instead.
Absolutely. That's one of the things we've been talking about is after the training, will they really use the training? And you brought up another matter. Will the money that is appropriated for CIT training actually go for CIT training? So I'm
That's
going to
exactly
give each
right.
of you another opportunity to speak, and we'll start with, is that 7892?
That's me, Gloria.
Okay, that's you, Gloria. Thank
yeah.
you for sharing with us today. I really appreciate you. And we're
but
going to
education.
Do this again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Go ahead.
And I just want to emphasize, I'm going to school to become a nurse. And, you know, because my daughter suffers from post-traumatic stress and my son had to do this for about 10 years and look normal. They look fine. They were National Honor Society students, you know. And even through college, these kids are entitled to an advocate, could be their mother, their father, a teacher. But there's disability services at every college for, I don't get it, it's going to take me longer to take this test. I take the test in 2 days. And even in court, if the person has a mental disability and they don't get it, the advocate can stand up because you know their symptoms. They have to be, you know, you have to know their symptoms. If they sweat, if they shake, if they, okay, you stop the court. We need a break. We will come back to this. And that's their right.
But that is a good law. And I'll wait for you to send me a copy of that. My email address is marylovesjustice@gmail.com. So
okay,
we thank you for calling today. I'm going to let some of the other people put in a final word. We only have another 7 minutes, but I really appreciate you calling. You gave good information, and I do want to receive a copy of that law so we can make people aware of it. If you call on Wednesday night, the Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill show
right.
on Wednesday night at midnight Eastern Standard Time, then I can give you a whole show where you can tell the public about the many things that you know regarding being a mental health advocate and about some of the, more of the situations that come up. And I appreciate you. And I want you to plan on doing that one Wednesday night, okay?
What time, Mary?
It will be midnight Wednesday, Eastern time, midnight.
Oh, I will
and
then.
What
I thought it was 3 o'clock. I'm in school.
You're going to be earlier? Well, we will also have this show next Sunday, and maybe you and I will get together and arrange for you to have the 3 o'clock hour next Sunday, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Now,
7892. Thank you. So
hello,
much
that's
calling.
Me. Wait. That's not me. Sorry, I got confused.
Okay, 7892.
That's Gloria still. You can mute me now or whatever
okay.
you do, Mary.
Okay, 1429.
That's me.
okay, go ahead.
Well, I'm Lisa, and
yes,
I think
Lisa.
That an issue that's on the side of this that is playing into this is the privatization of American prisons and how it's a for-profit motive based on human suffering and that it creates a demand for prisoners so that they can make a profit. And I think that that is also affecting this desire to just keep arresting, get them in, you know, funnel them to prison, funnel them to prison. And I wanted to mention that as my final thought.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. This program would have been completely incomplete in every way without putting private prison profiteering in the transcript, because we know that the mentally ill comprise over half of the American prisoners and that they were deinstitutionalized and community care became less available. All of that was done in order to excuse creating a huge private prison system, and the mentally ill comprise over half of the inmates in prison. 1.25 million of America's 2.3 million inmates are mentally ill, and that
That's
is bad choice. That is bad choice. 8522.
I'm here with you, Mary. I agree with everything you're saying today. We all need to be held accountable, and I'm for this bill, but hopefully they'll stipulate this House bill and make changes to hold the officers in the prison system.
Could you talk? Could you speak louder a little bit, or hold your phone closer to your mouth so we can hear you better?
Hopefully, this law that is being passed, this House bill, will go into.
You mean H.R. 3717, the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act?
Yes, that hopefully that will be changed, and it will look towards the accountability of the mentally ill in the prison system today we have. It's also once being incarcerated before prison, they should be held accountable for arresting mentally ill people on the streets that are homeless and ones that have a mental illness with hidden disabilities. They're not our officers are not trained, and they need this bill should be for holding them accountable if they kill one or injure one while incarcerated or arrest at the time. That bill needs to be changed and stipulated, I feel.
I agree with you that the problem is not just during the arrest, but it's after they reach jail. Lots of mentally ill people don't die during the arrest, but they die once behind bars. And those deaths, like my brother, wrongful death of Larry Neal, you can look it up online, those deaths are sometimes covered up. Let me ask Nancy Lockhart, do you feel that this man's death would have been covered up had it not been for the whistleblower?
Oh, it definitely would have been covered up. And new reports are showing us every day now that there are at least 10 times more mentally ill Americans in prisons and jails than in state psychiatric hospitals. So my last statement would be that, I seriously know and hope that something is done to open up more state psychiatric hospitals that have been closed during the Reagan administration But definitely, you know, too many people are being forced into jails and prisons that are mentally ill. And if they are successful in coming out, they're coming out in worse shape than when they entered because they're not getting the proper treatment in jail.
Absolutely. And the thing is that we know jails are stressful places. It's stressful for anyone to be locked up in jail and to be prisoners. That is stressful, and we also know that there are indeed injuries and deaths in jail that happen not only by other inmates but by the prison and jail guards. So those kinds of incidents happen continuously to the mentally ill more than to others in the general population, not to mention the solitary confinement, which we'll talk more about tomorrow. Solitary confinement. So again, senators, we're saying thank you for considering CIT training, but that is not enough. It certainly is not enough. And we want to let you know that we will continue this tomorrow at 3 p.m. and tomorrow night at 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time. I announced it on my Facebook page and on Google. So please get the number and call us if you have an opinion.